Adam Cravens, and Jane Ellen watch more movies each month than most people do in a year. Parental guidance suggested reviews new movies in theaters with no spoilers promise. These film nerds know their stuff.
Hello and welcome to Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
And we've been talking about, on our little show here, about shows, movies that you, if you haven't seen, you should see, or if you haven't seen in a while, you should revisit, because there was something special about them.
Films of note, if you will.
And I was thinking, and I was thinking, and I thunked, and I thunked, and I thought, hey now.
Isn't that what the Grinch did as well?
Yes.
And he had an awful thought.
The Wizard of Oz.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
1939 was one of the greatest years for great movies.
I generally like to call you on hyperbole when I think it's warranted. You just be like, there's nothing better. And I'll be like, well, what about this? And you're like, all right, fine, that thing. But like, you're not wrong, like, about that, especially like to get one film out of a year that mm-hmm. you would refer to as a classic is often difficult to do. To have that film or those films be directed by the same person is probably even rarer. Like, I can't get you to do that. Get any normal people, 100 people off the street. Name me, besides Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz, name me something else that came out in 1939.
Okay, are you ready?
Are you about to...
I'm going to name some.
I said I'm not asking you. I ask normal people.
Well, the normal people don't know. They might come up with Gone with the Wind, which is correct. But there are more. Okay, so imagine, you know, the movies, they're still pretty new in 1939. And
man, I hadn't even thought about, like, moving pictures
yes.
are still a reasonably new, like.
So the talkies have only been talking for about 12 years. And the first year of talkies, they weren't talking that much.
No,
so, and
it's kind of sort of synced up.
The Wizard of Oz, a little film called Gone with the Wind, Wuthering Heights. I mean, seriously, that Wuthering Heights with Laurence Olivier's chin. A little film called Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Well, there. Good old Jim Stewart. Hey.
And another Jim Stewart, Destry Rides Again. That's James Stewart and Marlena Dietrich. Oh, wait a minute. The movie that launched John Wayne's movie star career, Stagecoach. Oh, wait, there's another one. Ninotchka. Yes.
There really is a pretty...
Even if
you stop there, that's ridiculous.
The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Shirley Temple's The Little Princess, Drums Along the Mohawk, Betty Davis's Dark Victory, and Gulliver's Travels. No, not that one. The Women, one of the funniest, the 1939 Women. The Women, Goodbye, Mr. Chips, Dodge City.
I would say the only other year that comes to my mind that even gets close to that is probably Shawshank, Forrest Gump, Pulp Fiction. Like, I remember that year just because you had a bunch mm-hmm. of just ridiculous films that, like, I mean, honestly, if any of them would have had Best Picture, you could not, I mean, you could still... You can make that argument.
It's funny. We do the podcast almost at the same time every week, and yet no one Adam knows realizes that and always message him. It's hilarious. Now, I thought Errol Flynn's The Adventures of Robin Hood was 1939. That was actually 1938. You can see I was confused. But all those movies that I just named, they're a big deal. And those are, for some people, you might not recognize them, but certainly you know the names Betty Davis and Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne. These are major players.
Ridiculous, large, like mm-hmm. stars to the point that, like, even, let's see, what is this, 80 years removed? Something like that?
Yeah, sure.
That we are still talking about them.
Oh, for sure. And let me double check. The Wizard of Oz actually came out in August. So much of the year had passed, and they really hadn't started going for the Oscars. But I don't even know if they approached it that way, actually, the way they approach it now.
I don't think it was as much of a... Like it's almost like they know when to release, like the time of year to release it. Like they know if it needs to be kind of a structured release. They know if they want to open wide. They know if they want to do it here, build, or they want to make sure that they just do it like on Christmas Day so that mm-hmm. It's almost its own little like game.
Now, The Wizard of Oz was nominated for 17 Oscars. It only won two. One was for Best Soundtrack, duh. And the other for Best Song for Over the Rainbow. Again, double duh. And yet, let me see. What was it up against? It was such a departure, not only from the original work from which it came from, but from movies in general. To have a movie that, well, it started out black and white and then it went into color. I mean, I'm just going to assume that hadn't happened before.
I mean, you had movies that were black and white and you had movies that were in color. But it's one of the only films I can think of that used both and like two great effects. Like I think the when Disney did the kind of the sort of sequel Oz the Great and Powerful, they did it, but it was more as like kind of an homage to the film that they were sort of sequelizing.
Right. And so there are a lot of reasons why films weren't made in color back in the day, and one was the cost. And the other is, well, they weren't even thinking ahead. Well, it'll be on TV, and TVs weren't even invented, and TVs were black and white. I digress.
They weren't like, oh, this is going to show up on a 4K television. We need to make sure that we do this, that, and the other. And we want to make sure that it's not in pan and scan whenever it is shown on. Really, at that point, it was just this is a movie.
Now, when it comes to the other Oscars, the only one of note that I could have told you about all of this for that year, because of course the Oscars for those films in 39, the Oscars, that was 1940, and it was a huge deal. Hattie McDaniel won for Best Supporting Actress as Queenie in Gone with the Wind. Was that her name?
I can't remember.
She knew nothing about birthing babies, and it was a huge deal. Because she was the
first African-American to
win, and certainly deserved it. And Gone with the Wind pretty much, I want to say, blew it all away. But Gone with the Wind won most everything that year. Now, Wizard of Oz, it wasn't nominated for Picture of the Year.
No.
The leads were not nominated.
And actually, it was perceived as a financial failure upon its initial release. Now, the thing that this film kind of benefited from is the fact that, okay, there wasn't home video. There was home nothing at this point.
There was home nothing.
So the film essentially got to take on its life because every 5-10 years, like, you would have Saturday matinees for kids, you would have these re-releases, and eventually it almost kind of found its own life there, because MGM it was not the resounding success I think a lot of people assumed that it was.
Mm-hmm.
Now looking back on it, like, you know, it's had an animated series, it's had two different sequels from Disney, if I'm remembering correctly. I mean, it's had video games,
right?
Like, it's had toys.
However, let's look at this.
Sure.
It cost $2.8 million. That's money in the 30s.
Yeah, 1930s money.
And even though it's not considered to be a huge deal, see, again, came out the same year as Gone with the Wind. It made over $26 million. But compared to everything else that was out, I mean, Gone with the Wind was making like Avenger-type money. 1939.
With all of its re-releases, I want to say like it ended up making somewhere around, what was the, I want to say it's around like $200 million. And mm-hmm. like I said, like this is over the course of multiple re-releases. So keep in mind that like not all of this was at the, like movies today, like if it comes out in 2017, it makes its money in 2017, maybe into 2018. And then it has a like a home release, then it get, you know, or maybe a VOD, or, you know, it goes to like a, like maybe one of the apps, or it goes mm-hmm. to like HBO or something like that. So like there's a multitude of releases, but like you don't get to live in the theater for 20 or 30 years at this point. And if you were to like, I guarantee you, if you were to get somebody to break down all of the releases of Gone with the Wind, like this was a $1 billion mm-hmm. like franchise, like easy. And even though that's not the movie that we're talking about, like Wizard of Oz, like, I mean, it ended up fine. I guarantee you it's made MGM a buck. What, actually, I don't think MGM still owns it. I really? Want to say, I think they lost it to Turner at some point.
Let's see. It was produced by MGM.
Initially, right. But like, I want to say Warner Brothers actually holds the rights now to it.
Interesting. You're listening to Parental Guidance Suggested, brought to you by Hinson Oakley Family Dentistry. Jane Ellen talking with Adam Cravens about movies of note, this one being The Wizard of Oz. Now, Gone with the Wind, which it was up against, from a book. This is also from a book. And did you make the mistake, as I did, Adam, of having seen The Wizard of Oz and going, oh, I'd like to learn more. What? There's more than one book? I shall read them all. Oh, they're not like this at all.
There's a lot of significant, like the Wicked Witch of the West in the book, like is, I believe, short. Like she doesn't look anything like the character that we have all, like when I say Wicked Witch of the West, mm-hmm. the person that you immediately think of. The ruby slippers were not ruby. I want to say they were silver, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering correctly. Like, it's just that they changed and adapted a lot of things from that. And the classic, and like, I'm not, L. Frank Baum, I'm not, like, dumping on, like, any of his books. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, this wasn't even the first adaptation
right.
of the book.
Now, the books came out, the first one came out in 1900. So you're looking almost two generations away from the original book coming out, which, you know, that's a big jump. But still, the book is, I don't know, the book's a bit darker.
Yeah. Yep.
And hard to say weirder, but still.
I think that's actually pretty apt. And I mean, even if you look at like the sequel Disney did in 80, Return to Oz, that's a dark movie. It leans a little bit more into the I don't know if I want to call it scary or just really mm-hmm. kind of the strange. It's not quite like macabre, but like that movie in particular, I remember scaring me, especially one of the characters that had come from the book, Mombi. She could take off her head and put on someone else's head, and she would have the memories of the person mm-hmm. that she put on. And as a kid, like, I mean, I had seen the Wizard of Oz in, I don't know, I want to say 84, 85. Like, I was very young. And that one is not especially, like, scary. It's very much like a fantasy or a fairy tale. Mm-hmm. That book, like, gets in, or that movie, it's not really, it's adapted from a couple of them. But, like, it gets into some just dark stuff for a children's film.
Yeah.
In that, and I remember, just like, Mombi in particular, I remember just being like, oh, wow, this is
weird.
This is weird, and I think I'm scared. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I don't want to go to Oz anymore.
I remember, well, for me, it was on once a year. You know, the CBS evening movie, it would be like a Sunday night movie. Once a year, I would get to stay up late on a Sunday and I'd see The Wizard of Oz. And then one week it would be Butch and Sundance. Another week would be The Sting. I mean, every year in my mind, it's like, I get to see that movie again. And I waited for those movies to come around.
I almost, and like I said, I almost hate, and I've got, I don't know how many thousands of movies in my collection at this point, but it was an event. Like Very it was a shared so. Experience. And I love the ability to access it. When I want to say I've got the digital version, literally I could pull it up on my mm-hmm. phone right now if I wanted to. But like,
if you had told 10-year-old Jane that, well, I have a device and you can watch anything you want.
It'd be a
whenever.
Phone and you'd be like a rotary phone. You'd be like, no, that's not what I mean.
Anyway, this movie has so much lore around it. It's you could do hours and hours and hours on it. Much again, like Gone with the Wind, the casting for this went back and forth, back and forth. Could you imagine W.C. Fields as the Great and Powerful Oz? Because that's who it was going to be.
Or Buddy Ebsen as the
see,
Tin Man?
I can, but I've also seen him dance.
Well, if you've, he played, was it Jed in Beverly, the Beverly Hillbillies sitcom?
Yes,
he was initially cast,
yeah.
He was initially cast as the Tin Man, but they were using some kind of paste that they were using for his makeup to make mm-hmm. him look like the Tin Man. He had, I want to say, a severe allergic
yeah,
reaction to
I
believe
it. He almost died.
Yeah. And so they couldn't wait for him to recover and they recast mm-hmm. the role. But like, I mean, they have, and it's weird to see, especially because I saw this several years removed from knowing this as like a childhood classic. And I'm mm-hmm. just like, wait. He's in the Tin Man costume.
Huh?
This is weird.
Now, Burt Lahr was lined up to be the lion. And for some reason, the lion always bugged me in the movie. And I can't say why. I would have to like really spend some time in therapy to go, why did the lion annoy me so much? Not so much that I hated him, but I mean, compared to the others.
I've always enjoyed that like everybody else kind of seems to have this kind of ambiguous accent going, but like the lion seems
oh, yes,
like a very specific like mm-hmm. time period. It's almost, and I know that I compliment him all the time and I love this movie, but like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, everyone else is speaking yeah. with a British accent till you get to Robin Hood. And
care.
Like, you're like, is he from Boston? Like what's going on? Why is Robin Hood not speaking with a British accent?
I think my issue with the lion was weakness and indecision bother me. And
well, but that's his character arc
exactly.
as well.
And
like, so
therefore,
I mean,
therefore, he annoys me. What can I say? Bothers like it, me. I'm just guessing. I don't know. I mean, there was no reason. I should have thought the lion was the best, but I didn't.
And evidently, like his costume, if I'm remembering right, was made out of like actual
lion.
Like it was either lion or like ugh. Yak hair or something. It was something.
Horrible.
It was something so that like he was so uncomfortable and hot in that. I mean, you can look at it like in the film, like and just sit there and go, man, that's got to be warm. Like that.
Yeah.
That doesn't look like that's breathing. That is definitely not athletic mesh that he's wearing.
Now, where was I going with it? Oh. W.C. Fields, the reason why he did not become the Great and Powerful Oz, he thought the part was too small and he wanted more money. And they said, no, pass.
We'll
Frank
just,
Morgan.
We'll do this.
But I like it better because initially he was just going to be that character. But Frank Morgan ended up being more than one character, which I didn't catch on as a young kid.
No, like there's a lot of stuff that upon further viewing, like I'll be honest, I also didn't realize, like, when I was younger that the farmhands were being played by the same people mm-hmm. that were, like, it was just later I'd listen to their voice and I'd be like, they sound a lot like a person I know. Who is the person I know? And I'm like, wait a minute.
Now, as a kid, did you pick up on the fact that Hunk was named, first of all, Hunk, who was the Scarecrow, and that there was a scene that kind of said they're going to have a romance, and that was removed. Did you pick up on that?
I don't think
I did.
Because
she says to the Scarecrow, I think I'll miss you most of all. And so, in a way, it's kind of unnerving.
I did not clue in on a lot of romantic things. Was I like,
it wasn't, I mean,
no, but I'm saying like even overt romantic things when I was like a child, like I didn't pick up on, like, it just wasn't on my radar. Like I wasn't looking for like sword fights. Mm-hmm. Sure. Space battles. Great. Starships. I'm in. Romance. Mm-hmm. What else you got? What else you got?
And the casting of Dorothy was huge because it made Judy Garland, Judy Garland. She had been in some films, but
or at least
minor.
Cemented her.
Yes. And I think the main choice, the original choice, was to go with Shirley Temple. She's the biggest child star. They needed a child. Go with her. And that makes sense. But they decided
the emotional range that you needed to see.
They decided to go else in another.
Because she would have been. She wouldn't even been 10 at this point,
I don't think
would
so.
She? I mean, she would have been on the much younger. And I think Garland was, what, like 16?
I think she was 17? 15 when they started filming.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, and I'm not saying that, you know, Dorothy's, like, you know, just going through, like, all the emotions. But, like, it's the anchor of the film.
Right.
And, like, if you're not emotionally connected to that character, the rest of the film is going to have problems.
The fact that there was someone who took the character's dog, well, that just destroyed me. Forget about the storm. The woman took her dog.
And like, and she's not apologetic
at all
about it.
And I also wanted to know, why do you keep taking her by and the dog is going to met? I mean, there's a lot of anxiety for me. Why didn't you at least put the dog on a leash? I mean, you know she's going to do this. It's very, very upsetting. And they never explained why she doesn't have parents, almost like it was a Disney film. But
actually, of all the things that I deep dive into whenever I'm just like, wait, why is that way? I don't think I've ever bothered to check why Dorothy didn't mm-hmm. have. I mean, it's the 1930s. Like, it could have just been, you know, what was smallpox a thing then? Like, had we gotten rid of it? It's something like that.
But anyway, it was such an extraordinary film. And the more you visit it, the more you see, I think. And as you said, she's the anchor. Judy Garland plays the anchor. And much like with Marilyn Monroe, I feel that Judy Garland has so much trauma in her life. The desire to hang on her every word or want to help her in some way is intrinsic in her, that it breaks your heart every time she sings.
She has a remarkable voice.
Yeah.
And like, not just the songs in the film, her singing the song, like there's like Disney has made no telling how many millions of dollars on musicals. But like whenever there was a live action version of The Lion King, I didn't throw a fit because it wasn't this person singing it. Mm-hmm. I really can't think of someone else singing Somewhere Over There. Like, she has like a song that it just in and of itself is a classic. Her version of it mm-hmm. is also a classic. And I'm sure multiple other people have taken shots at it, but like, she took that one and she like owned it. And it's not like it's even like a big show stopping.
And
like,
it was
set
going
piece.
To be cut from the show.
It was going
to be cut. Nothing's really happening here. It's not moving the story
forward. She's an MGM starlet and it's undignified for her to be singing in a barnyard. Like, the year is 2020. Like, and we are still talking about that moment.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go ahead and say I'm calling shenanigans on that executive. It's a good thing somebody was just like, nah, it's good.
He's friends with the guy that said, Beatles, pass.
Or the Steven Spielberg, you'll never work in this town again. Oh, I won't, will I? Okay, all right, we'll see about that.
So, by the way, my mind was always blown as a kid that horse changed color.
Now, well, I mean, and keep in mind, color was a big deal back then.
So in 1939, the whole scene at the Emerald City is in color. And then the horse itself changes color, but the whole scene doesn't change color. I mean, that was That's huge.
Yeah. Yep.
All of it, huge. So if you have not seen The Wizard of Oz, you really should. It was extraordinary.
I am genuinely surprised. And now it has been sequelized. I can't think of one that I would really say is the definitive version. And like, this is also a film that really required no sequel. I am very surprised no one has attempted to remake this film.
See, I've been trying to prepare myself by preparing my children. For instance, Anna Grace loves Harry Potter movies. And I said, I just want you to prepare yourself that when you're, let's say, 40, that movie, oh, she's 15. Nah, I mean, it's going to be over 20 years. And sometimes it's an every 20-year thing. I said, someone's going to take that property, and I bet you they're going to decide to remake it.
I think before that happens, I think somebody writes J.K. Rowling a large enough check where they're just like, listen, year 7, I got it. I'm not saying it's a year 9, but like... Harry didn't die at the end of that book, right? Right. Right? He's like R-ing or something. What happened next? And she's like, no, I don't want to touch that. And she's like, wow, that's the number. That's the number right there. Suddenly I know what he's doing. Exactly. I know what he's doing.
I wish someone would do that to me. Anyway, so I'm glad no one has remade that because you're setting yourself up for disaster.
Well, I mean, again, like this is a classic, like
a classic in many ways.
There's a whole lot of films that like, you can't improve upon them. Like evidently Universal is pushing Spielberg to produce a Jaws remake. And I'm just like,
no,
I mean, sure. Like I'm sure they'll cut you a fat check,
yeah.
Stephen.
Or maybe
he's sitting there just going, there's no way they top my version. What? So I should just turn down free money? No.
And
go ahead. Try to remake it. They tried to do sequels. They couldn't do them without me.
I'll watch Chris Pratt as the police officer of the town. I'll watch that. And yet, I can see that, can't you?
Yeah.
And I'll watch, I guess, Kevin Hart in the Richard Dreyfuss character.
I could see that.
But I'll watch Paul Giamatti getting eaten by a shark.
Still,
it doesn't need to be remade.
Or like Lord of the Rings. Like when they kept pushing Hobbit further and further away, and they hadn't made the inferior movies that we ended up realizing they were. And I'm just like, guys, Ian McKellen isn't getting younger.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, like he was Betty White old whenever they made the first ones. Okay. Mm-hmm. We need to make this happen, or you just need to record him doing all the lines that he needs to, and you can green screen him in later. Okay.
Exactly.
But we have to have Ian McKellen. Everyone else, you can change that if you have to, but I have to have Ian McKellen as Gandalf. And I'm really surprised that no one's dollar signs has overridden this. And like I said, I'm not even sure who owns it right now.
Well, do you think they'll ever remake A New Hope? I mean, again, there's something about a movie like that or Jaws and all of them. It wasn't just the movie. It was how that movie was made.
And it's the time that it hit.
Timing.
It's the,
it's
like the era that it struck, like all of it just came together in a perfect like confection. It just created this storm that allowed Star Wars like to become the behemoth
that
it was.
Maybe that's why George Lucas adding the explosions and extra creatures bugs me, because he wasn't able to do that in 1977. And so there's no need to go back and mess with that. Just leave it alone. This is how it was meant to be.
Yeah. But like, that's not the way George Lucas. Well, I mean, if you look at Dan Aykroyd's original script for Ghostbusters, like, if they would have let him just go off the chain initially, like, the film is in the future. Like, Ghostbusting is like a franchise. Like, it just, there's so much about it that I'm just like, that film is grounded in no reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Listen, like if you animated that and for you were just like, this is the Ghostbusters it could have been, yeah, you've got me in that. I'll check it out. But like, you don't create the Ghostbusters that we got in 1984. Like the perfect confection of events that allowed you to create this film that is beloved 40, 50, you know, 35 mm-hmm. years, 80 years after their releases. Stay away from them. Like, lightning often does not strike twice. Now, Lucas got lucky with Empire Strikes Back.
Exactly.
But legit, like, name me another Star Wars movie that you just love.
Yeah. But anyway.
Just say it. Just say it.
I do have warm feelings for Rogue One.
It's a good movie, but do you love that movie like you love Empire Strikes Back?
Oh, no. But Rogue One, I think, aside from the original trilogy, I probably lean most toward Rogue One because it's just a great standalone movie.
Yeah.
And it's just a great movie. And Solo's a good movie, too, and Adam and I stand by that. But we're talking about Wizard of Oz. I suggest you watch it again. And sadly, we don't have an event of Wizard of Oz viewing because you can just watch it whenever. So it worries me that some people just don't know it.
Well, I think it adds a certain like allure or experience. Kind of I am not personally a fan of the film, but like a lot of my friends, especially like when I was in college, like I did a lot of theater, they loved the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Mm-hmm. Like I have an appreciation for Tim Curry, but like they would do like the midnight events where mm-hmm. like they're throwing stuff at the, like, maybe I don't appreciate the film because I didn't see it like that. I just saw it in somebody's living room and I'm just like, this is odd. And I was younger and I'm just like, I don't get it. I don't get this. But when you have that added like experience, it's kind of like trying to explain to people how big Michael Jackson was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like you can hear it now and they're just like, oh yeah, I love Thriller. And I'm just like, you don't know how big Michael Jackson was in the 80s. You don't understand it. Like when he did a video or when he did that, like it was everywhere. Like, and unless you are in that moment in time and you really get to experience, you can see every documentary, you can have somebody mm-hmm. tell you how big it was or maybe extrapolate or draw a parallel for you, but you're never going to really get to experience it that same way. And I say all that and I wasn't alive in 1939 when this movie came out, but like, this film did benefit from the status that it gained mm-hmm. by like CBS owned it for a number of years or NBC owned it for a number of years. Like they made sure that it was still an event even after it wasn't going into theaters. Mm-hmm. And I want to say they did a 3D re-release somewhere.
People used to annoy me when Ted Turner was colorizing things. They'd say, you know, they're going to colorize Wizard of Oz.
And I'd be like, they can leave the part with the cut. But the black and white thing, actually, that works as a perfect book into the movie.
And you'll enjoy this. One of Jim's coworkers was talking about 1939, how none of the movies made in 1939 were in color. And he was like, well, let me tell you about two of them.
At least
one
two.
One won an Oscar. Huh? And they're like, ooh.
The other I know you've heard of.
Yeah. Ooh. That's exactly how they responded. Anyway, Wizard of Oz, we could go off on so many tangents, but you need to see it. And I have spoken. You just need to see it.
I mean...
See it, revisit it as an adult.
As much as you and I were referring to Singing in the Rain as probably the best movie musical mm-hmm. that's ever been made, like, The Wizard of Oz, like, and I'm not... It's obviously a musical, but like, I think it almost transcends
yes.
just being a music. Like that film was kind of my gateway into what eventually led me to like Lord of the Rings, Willow. Like the fantasy aspect of that. Like when I saw that as a kid, I'm just like witches and lions, flying monkeys, and wizard. Like it captured my imagination beyond the fact like of any of the other accolades that you and I have talked about.
And while you mentioned the flying monkeys, but what exactly were the guards?
I don't know. What are they saying? Whenever they were Oreos.
But I mean,
they weren't
munchkins and they weren't monkeys, but they had tails, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I think.
So they were kind of like the eternal is Goofy a dog or not? They're just They're just something weird.
He is.
Well, he is.
He's a pantsless, upright, English-speaking dog.
Doesn't he wear pants and a vest?
I don't know. I think, or maybe it's Donald that doesn't
Donald
wear pants.
Donald doesn't wear pants.
Mickey wears
nor
pants. Is, Donald doesn't.
Porky. I'd throw that in. Thanks. Anyway, we digress a lot. Wizard of Oz. Stop what you're doing. Go and watch it.
It's a, like, if you, there were about 17,000 VHS releases of it. There have been several DVD releases of it. There were multiple Blu-ray releases of it. I know of at least one 4K release of it. It is available digitally everywhere. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere, but I'm just saying, like, you can get your hands on this movie.
And you need to. Thank you for listening to Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
You've been listening to Parental Guidance Suggested. Download your favorites and keep up with new episodes in the Hints and Oakley Podcast Center.